Greet you again in the name of Jesus. For the local home congregation, you know that I have been preaching through the book of James. But this morning, in the last little while, I was led to some other thoughts. I wasn't quite sure what I should do, and part of it, I don't know what all directed me in this way. I know what some of it is. I trust that some of it's the Lord, not my own thoughts. But with the events that happened this morning of taking in these brothers and sister into the church, my mind was thinking about that for the last while. And so I just felt that that's where my heart was, my mind, and that I would respond to that and try to preach some things that have been on my mind. You know, we are blessed and encouraged, like I said earlier, to have new brothers and sisters come into our church, to join our church on the journey of life, trying to live for the Lord and the practical outworking of that among humans on earth. But as you think about this, I was thinking, why is it that these three young people have bothered to join themselves to this church, a church? Is it necessary? Is it important? Does it make any difference? Is church membership important? And when you look around at all the struggling churches that are grappling with things, why should someone join a church? Why not just avoid the potential trouble that you know is going to be coming down the road at some point, and just slip in on Sunday morning and slip back out? Seems a bit safer. Why? And so as I thought of these questions in new and, I think, deep soul-searching ways, not only in the last week or two, but in the previous year or two, I want to try to share some thoughts. I know these questions are loaded. I know these questions are complex and they're messy and they're controversial. And I know that. And there's a side of me that just wants to ignore this subject and not touch it because I know that it's a sensitive topic at times, or can be. As a young man in my youth coming into the church life, I enjoyed the discussion, the challenging debates on the whole subject of church, and could ask challenging questions and try to analyze things and the whys and the necessities of certain things. And I had and still have friends that have different backgrounds in the practical ways of church life and the views and the structure and the practice. But like life has a way of doing to us as we experience things sometimes, it can make us start to shrink back from certain things and to feel a little bit more cautious, a little bit more uncertain. And maybe especially so for some of us in our own church, last few years have been not all easy things, hard things. And my intention this morning, I want to say, is not to try in any way to pretend that I have correct answers in the practical outworking of the church, because I don't even feel that way. Or to try to bolster our or my position as a Halsey church here, a local church, and paint the picture that we are right, others are wrong, because again, I don't feel that way. I really don't. I want to be sensitive and humble and realizing that, you know, we are all, wherever you are, some of you I don't even know, are mere human beings that are groping for answers in life, for the practical outworking of how to live the Christian life one with another. I don't want to be guilty of shrinking back in fear and not touching the subject either, hiding from it. My goal would maybe be more, in the big picture, to stir up our thinking, to stir up all of us, but especially our own church, on an individual basis and also as a church congregation, about where are you and where am I at? Where should we be at in church life and in relating one to another? And I'll just say right now that this message is really kind of a preliminary to the second one. This one is going to be unfinished. It's going to not even get into a lot of the positive things. But I want to go on a few bunny trails first. And I would feel like this is where my thoughts have went in laying the groundwork for some of this. And so most of this message is a backdrop and a preparation for the next. And the title for the message that I gave for this morning is Virtual Realities. And probably most of you in the young generation from, 15, 16 on up, would know what virtual reality means. What it means to you probably means something different to the era of John and Leonard and Jason, maybe, of what virtual reality was. We know that virtual reality today is a kind of technology, gaming equipment. They're headsets. There's all different kinds. I don't know a lot about them. I've tried one on in Best Buy before. Goggles that seal around your head, and I think some of them have earmuffs, and then you have controls in your hands. And there's a three-dimensional movie in this screen right before your eyes with all the noise and whatever all goes with that. That is what often a lot of people think of, or the definition today of virtual reality. Now, obviously, that branches out. There's been virtual realities of different kind for a while. There's been flight simulators that have been used as a tool for teaching people how to fly airplanes. You either get in these things that look like an airplane on the inside and act and feel, and the instruments are in there. And those can be very useful because they save a lot of money, and it diminishes the risk of someone that actually has to get in an airplane and burn real fuel and get up, and if there's an accident, it could be a life, it could be lots of destruction. So it simulates all this, and it's very real, and teaches people how to fly airplanes, and they never are even off the ground. But these things, I didn't even have the thing on very much, and it's been a while, barely remember, but it's very real. I mean, whether, that thing's around your eye and there's a fish swimming out of the corner of your eye, and it's just everything is feels so real in these virtual reality headsets. I want to read just a few descriptions here, just secular descriptions of virtual reality to give you kind of paint the picture of this. Virtual reality makes it possible to experience anything, anywhere, anytime. It is the most immersive type of reality. Technology can convince the human brain that it is somewhere it is really not. Head-mounted displays are used with headphones and hand controllers to provide fully immersive experience. With the largest technology companies on the planet, Earth, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, currently investing millions of dollars into virtual reality companies and startups, the future of virtual reality is set to be a pillar to our everyday lives. Another one, total immersion. That's one word they talk about, total immersion. So just, it's so all around you. Means that sensory experiences feel so real that we forget it is a virtual, artificial environment and begin to interact with it as if we were naturally in the real world. Another one. Virtual reality simulates a physical presence in the real world or an imagined world, allowing the user to interact with the world. Virtual reality will undoubtedly blur the lines between what's real and what's imaginary. Those are some of the little clippets off of the definition of that. And I have A couple definitions I want to look at are just the two words that I wrote on the board. Most of you would know that, but I thought just for the sake of the visual and maybe some younger people. So the definition of virtual is almost or nearly as described, but not completely or according to strict definition. And the definition of reality is the world or state of things as they actually exist, as opposed to an idealistic or notional idea of them. Virtual reality. And so these two words, although they are very similar and so close in a sense, are really actually opposite on one hand. In some sense, it's kind of like an oxymoron. It's like something that is not real is real. Or you convince yourself that it's that. It's like icy hot, something that's cold but hot. How does that work? Well, we know that there's some things that kind of do have those two things in one. So that is virtual reality. And the fact that is that in this world that we live in, where the lines between reality and the imagined, they are blurred, and they are intentionally blurred at times. And sometimes it is so much so that we get to the point where we have to stop and think about which one is real and which one's imaginary. And what is home base? Where is ground zero? What is real? What is solid? Like Will said, there's a lot of voices, and I'll get to some of that later. And I think it's an interesting, speaking of oxymorons, in the earlier definition I read, that it said that, if you think about that, virtual reality is set to be a pillar, to be one of the pillars in our everyday life. That is interesting, because virtual reality isn't real. But a pillar is something that is solid, that doesn't move, that doesn't count on it. So this virtual reality that isn't even real is in our imagination, becomes a pillar in our society. Virtual reality does not stop with technology and gaming and the entertainment world. We know that in the world today that black does not necessarily mean black anymore. And that just because you have a cute little precious baby boy born to you, he might actually be a girl, and you just don't know it yet. And so the lines get blurred from reality to virtual reality. And it creeps into our homes, our marriages, our churches, and in our own minds. And it gets to the point where if you try to stand on any kind of truth, you're just an arrogant, ignorant person. If you try to say that anything is actually solid, anything is actually real, it just shows that you're naive and you're so biased and you're so religious or whatever it might be. So virtual reality is not really reality at all. Virtual reality is just simply really, really good counterfeit. That is what virtual reality is. And so my main point this morning, if I have a main point, is it's not really about technology. It's not really about gaming, although those things enter in to different aspects of it. But God made a real world with real people and real relationships. There's the real laws of gravity, physical. There's real laws of the spiritual, emotional laws. We have the gravity, we have the sowing and reaping. What you sow will grow, if something grows. You have the faithfulness of the seasons, summer and winter, springtime and harvest. God made the systematic functionings of the universe in the order that we can count on. They happen. They're orderly. There's the spiritual laws of that Jesus said, if you forgive, you will be forgiven. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's the beauty of all kinds of relationships in marriage, in the home. When done God's way and followed by His laws and His order, produces a certain thing. If the husband loves his wife as his own body, and the wife respects her husband, and the children obey their and honor their parents, it'll produce something. Of course, there's always free will in there. The devil, on the other hand, comes along and has made many, many counterfeits. Things that seem real. And from the beginning of humanity, it's been this way. The devil is a master at virtual reality. And it seems like for everything that God created, the devil makes multiple virtual realities for that. And the Bible says in 2 Corinthians, just read a few verses there, it's talking about, back to the subject that Will talked about this morning, about the deceivers. In 2 Corinthians 11:13, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works." And so we see that the devil's business is to deceive and to offer alternative options and create a following of helpers in this work. And the deceivers are not, and the devil is not necessarily evil-looking men, but it is really nice men and really nice women and sweet little angels. And the devil is good at what he does. I would like to read here Romans chapter 1, starting at verse 20. If you want to turn to that, you're welcome to. Romans 1, verse 20, and I think I'll read to the end of the chapter here. And this would be to the church of Rome. "For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that they, when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, and to four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness, through the lust of their hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also men, leaving the natural use of women, burned in their lusts one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them." And we see here simply the process of what happens when man takes God's ways. And it talks about here that man takes and changes it. Changes it from its original design to a different way. And takes the laws and the realities that God set up in all different areas of life and changes them to something different. And so I want to think a little bit about relationships this morning, just in a broad sense, that God made us as social beings. Some of us are more social than others. Some of us have little tolerance to be with people, and others just can be with them all the time. But we are all social in some way. And we see that at the very beginning when God created Adam, and it wasn't, I don't know how long, but God said it wasn't good that the man should be alone and created him a helpmate. And one of the subconscious things in our life that is the most valuable to us is just other people. People that aren't trying to minister to us, but just their presence, sometimes their words, sometimes just being with us when we're lonely, when we're discouraged, when we're sad, just the presence of other people and their moods, their emotions, their words often will lift us up and encourage us and help us. And sometimes that is our spouse, sometimes that is just a friend or a church member, family member, someone, just some friend that simply cares and brings comfort to us in whatever way we need. But in the complexities of social relationships, there are thorny aspects as well. It is not always good times. There are people, when we are with real people, that say real words, and just we get to know them. They have irritations that we don't like, that we don't agree with. It's just difficult. That's another aspect of relationships. Sometimes they ask us too many questions and irritate us in that way, challenge us. But there is a wholesomeness that comes with real interaction with other human beings on different levels. Real relationships engage us on different levels. We see each other. We hear each other. We sense the emotions of each other, the vibes that are going back and forth, the body language, when we're face to face in real relationships. But today, with the help of media, we have virtual online relationships. And these relationships seem so real and so meaningful and so interesting. But they are really missing a lot of reality in them. They are shallow often. They're artificial. There's no waiting. There's no just mundane stretches in life of living together, doing just normal things. It's all ramped up to the interesting, just a full diet of interesting of what's happening. And in real life, whether it's with your wife, with your family, with your church, part of life is just waiting, living, nothing exciting happening. But it's all part of the whole healthiness of relationships. And media can bypass a lot of that. You can just constantly be clicking, going through, checking in on a lot of friends, or promoting your image on what you want to promote. Virtual interaction with people. And there's a sense of that that is safe. It feels safe because there's distance, there's space. We can do all of that from our living room, and nobody actually has to see us. We can promote what we want to promote. We can carefully project the image and check in on everybody else. Virtual relationships. They seem real. They seem safe. They seem inspiring. But they're not healthy often. I believe that our society is starting to reap. I just read a book. If you get a chance, you maybe should read it. The Boys Adrift. Or I'm listening to it. And in that, it sets out to answer the question of what is wrong with our young men of this generation from, I don't know, 10 to 30, 20, 30-year-olds, just unmotivated, still at home with their parents in the basement in their mid-20s, no ambition. And he has different opinions and factors, and I'm not saying it's all right, but one of the big factors is this whole social, gaming, whatever, relationships, virtual relationships. They're good at virtual relationships. They can achieve at them, but in the real world, in holding a job or being productive in society, it's not there. It's missing. Media can be a fine tool to communicate. I use it probably as much as a lot of you or more. But as a primary means of social life, it'll leave us handicapped, I believe, in living out real relationships and struggling to even communicate on basic levels. So in our society of high speed, worldwide connectivity, it has been replaced with virtual connectivity. And although we can meet 100 friends in one day and connect with them online, we really are not connecting with anyone often. In marriage relationships, God has a plan, again, a real plan, becoming a husband, a wife, two real people that meet together, live together. And this one goes even deeper. This is the deepest relationship that man has. It is close, it is intimate, it is holy, it is what the Bible compares to Christ and the church. In the past generations, unfaithfulness has always been a part of humanity from the beginning of time. There's been married people that are unfaithful. But in previous generations, it was always a real man with a real woman. And so there was an element of reality that was still with that, that had to be weighed in making that kind of a mistake. There was still a more of a sense of reality in that. But again, today, the devil has offers all kinds of alternative virtual relationships that replace the marriage. Some of these things seem so real. Some of them almost seem improved versions of what God had planned. And that is what the devil is a master at. And often we'll see that in advertisement. There'll be one product we bought, but the next year, the next, there'll be a new and improved version. They take the things in it that are not working right, and they'll improve it. And it'll be a better one. It'll be just like it with all the good features, but when you take out the bad, and now we have a new and improved version. And that's what the devil does. Tries to do in marriages. And men can go online now and find women always available. Never talk back. Never challenge you. Never challenge your thinking. Women that always smile and that always say yes. And you can click on the web as long as you want. Feed your lust as long as you have time and money. A relationship that God designed to be so beautiful, so full, so emotional, spiritually, physically, the devil offers a virtual option for the self-centered man. And the virtual relationship, it offers excitement, it offers pleasure. But the new and improved version, you don't have to put up with the little annoyances, the difficult struggles. You don't have to live with the headaches of life. It's just the good part. And it's all very real. And you know what? If you're married and you had your vows, as we do, in the marriage vows, in a real marriage, it says that you're to love in sickness and adversity. And that speaks of hard times and hard days and days that are not fun, days that you're not excited about being married necessarily. But you love through those times. Because the whole makes something beautiful. The mundane and the everyday lives and the lows and the highs and all together the faithfulness produce a wholesome reality of a home and a marriage. But there are a lot of people that have come to the conclusion that the realities of marriage, the commitment part, the effort to make it work is just not worth the pain. It's not worth it. There are men that have openly and publicly say that they would rather just have the virtual relationship online. Just would rather have that. Don't deal with the real. And so they have chosen to skip the package of marriage and try to create a world that gives them the benefits, the fellowship, the physical intimacy, but deduct the serving, the submitting, the commitment to working through differences. It can seem so real, but in reality it leaves a path of destruction and pain and sorrow and emptiness. And young people, don't fall for it. It is available, it is easily accessible, and no one can stop you if that's what you choose to do. The devil promises so much, but he will leave you robbed and empty with nothing. You know, there's a place for courting. There's a place for dating. It is good. It's necessary. It's wise. It's prudent. If you're considering to marry someone, to spend some time before the commitments are made to understand and try to get a feel for if you are compatible or not. And that is good. But dating was never meant to replace marriage. It is to prepare you for marriage. What about the church? I'm coming back full circle to the church now. I don't know if you've ever stopped to think and consider consciously. I'm sure we've all done it a little bit subconsciously, just without thinking about it. But have you ever stopped and tried to actually just think of a list, of a description? Maybe it'd be a good exercise to actually write down a list of your dream church. Your dream church. If you could have it exactly like you wanted it. What would the members be like? What would be your focus? How would the preachers operate? Or maybe there wouldn't be preachers. How would you treat one another? How many visitors would attend your church on Sunday? Your dream church, the one that was had it about right. How much money would the church give you when you were in need? You know, it might be good for us to do this once in a while, just to think about our dream church. But then I would add, when you're done doing that, we should ask ourselves how we're measuring up to that list. How we're fitting into that. If we would make a good church member at that church. You know, back to the media. There's a tremendous amount of information today on printed and media. And we know and talk, and you probably get tired of it, like I just got done kind of bashing the internet and the media on certain elements. But there's also a whole side of it that's really got a lot of good things. Good sermons, sermon indexes, and just tons of old ones. YouTube, you can go watch old preachers. And there's books now that you can read and listen to, and people give you articles and recommend things. And to me, I just feel like sometimes I just have an information overload. I just can't handle it. And I bring that on myself, I know. I don't need to put myself under that pressure. But if I start getting a few recommended books that I kind of want to either listen to or read, and a couple things to listen to, and they're sitting there and I'm not getting to them, I just start feeling pressure. I need to get through these things, but I'm not getting at it. And so I think that is just our society. There is just so much out there that we could feed on. And it really is a lot of good things. Very good things. Trying to find where I'm at on that thought. Okay, so in all of these good things, which I am actually a promoter of them, even though my nature, I have brothers and I have friends that absorb all that stuff a lot better than I do, and I don't think we should put each other under that kind of pressure. I think some people just don't listen to as much or don't do as much, and that's okay. But on the other hand, I would say that it's good to read. It's good to hear a different perspective. It's good to have input into our lives that kind of challenge our thinking of what we always thought it was. But there's in all of this media that is available, I think there's a danger of a virtual reality that can slip into our minds and into our churches. And as much as it has led people to the church or led people to God, and I know that people have experienced that, maybe some of you that have heard powerful messages and they have moved you and led you in steps in your life to where you are today. And I think that is a blessing and a tool of God. But I'd also say that along with that, that it, although it can be good to hear the fiery, inspirational messages, if we are not careful, we can start feeling like all the online guys are the good guys. They're the real Christians. They're the real ones. In my church, it starts to diminish us, the importance, and we start seeing their flaws more and more. And we start to fellowship with the online church and the church of the media and the virtual church than our own people, because it's a lot less messy. It's a lot more exciting. It's fun-packed. You miss all the main, mundane, painful things of life. You can shut him off when you're done with him. He never comes to your house. He's not involved in your life, and you're not involved in his. You have no idea what he's really like. And that is a blessing in itself. That's why we sometimes have revival meeting speakers. They can come in and say things that some of us can't tell each other or receive from each other. And that can be a blessing. But I think that these things must not replace the real church. God gave us real relationships and a real church. I want to read, forgot to read this. I was going to read this a few minutes ago. I'll just read it now. It is called, okay, there's a paragraph first here I want you to read. I want you to think about this a little bit. A quote, "He who loves his dream of a community more than the Christian community itself becomes a destroyer of the latter." That just means that you love what you love, what you think should be right about God and spiritual so much, and so much better than your actual community, that your dream destroys the community. Now I want to read here a poem. It's called "The Vibrant Virtual Church." The man loved to tell of a church with such life that it never was bothered by gossip or strife, a place where each member shared blessing around, words thoughtless or hurtful could never be found. This church, he told folks, loved the hurting and lost, and wandering sheep were sought at great cost. In prisons and alleys where evil is crowned, he'd seen them there freeing those Satan had bound. When they met for service, each face had a glow. Their harmonious singing was never too slow. The preaching was powerful, the best he had heard. The message was never by fear of man blurred. He fruitlessly searched, for he had a mind keen, for a church which compared to this church which he had seen, where sweet, gentle children were kind when they played. When one had a struggle, they all stopped and prayed. He'd looked the world over, searched churches around, yet never an equal to this one he'd found. Most churches have people who dabble with sin. Their members all struggle again and again. But this church, in contrast, had power within. He had watched it for years, and he had never found sin. So the man grew discouraged as he struggled to find a church that compared to this church in his mind. He loved to recount just how churches should be and be free, and he freely would try to help others to see how glorious and perfect if they too could find this church that existed alone in his mind. So from church to church he continually bounced. With zeal and great boldness he skillfully trounced. Each flaw that he found, he freely maligned. Each church that was less than the one in his mind. Many times we sit down and bemoan and deplore while God has before us a wide open door. But our minds are consumed by the fact that we find that our church isn't quite like the one in our mind. But I'm thankful so glad that our God didn't wait and offer salvation to only the great. 'Twas the feeble he died for, the halt and the blind. It was imperfect people he had in his mind. God has placed us in churches, imperfect and stressed, defective, deficient, lethargic at best. But when God's our focus, with joy we will find more glorious His church than the one in our mind. And then it says that God has not promised us perfect church communities. Just as personal sanctification is an ongoing process, so we find the process of building church communities. It is an ongoing work, and if we are going to pursue God while God's will in our churches, it will be both painful and rewarding. And so again I say, the virtual church. Where do we blend idealisms and not become complacent? How do we blend God's ways, perfection, with the realities of humanity? I don't know how you bring all that together. I don't know where all the lines are exactly. But I think it is just good for us to remember that. We are not an all-star team. We are not a dream team. We are not the elite. We don't have it all figured out. But at the same time, we try to be faithful. We try to be committed. We try to build. We try to encourage. Bless one another. And being part of a real church is hard. And just like any good marriage, it takes a lot of hard work. It takes the long stretches of desert. It takes the good times, the bad times. There's a lot of strands to the fabric of a marriage and a good home. The discipline, the practice, the eating meals together, the saying I'm sorry, the schedules of bedtime. There's just a lot of fabric that when you look at a family that is beautiful and godly, it just does not happen by itself. There's a lot of practical threads that go into that in everyday life. And I would suggest that it is the same in church relationships. It does not just happen by itself. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of commitment. And we dare not settle for just dating the church. Like the man that has come to the conclusion that finally real marriage is just a joke. She's too moody. She's got too many problems. I'll just date the online virtual marriage. If you look at the New Testament, take the time from Acts to Revelation, it is just full of advice, practical working of people and church problems. It's been that way from the beginning. And yet Paul, church after church after church, he gave an admonition to help and to build and correct it. And God has a plan. And God has a real plan that if we follow, it won't be always perfect, but it can be building His kingdom. And so the next message, Lord willing, I'd like to look at some realities of church life, the purposes of church life, and the vision of the church. And I, again, would say that I am on a journey. What I see now will probably look different in 10 years. What you've seen 10 years ago may look different. Looks different now. That is the sum of life. And so we don't apologize for that. But that is the importance of staying close to the Word of God. And staying, hearing what He has to say and trying to understand that and live that as best we can. So God bless you. Let's have a closing song.